You are listening to iRadio TT, online all the time.
Welcome to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. The podcast series featuring news, interviews and analysis of all the music from the islands.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Music Matters,
the Caribbean edition. I am Laura Dowridge Phillips.
And I am Nigel Campbell. And once again, we're talking about the business of music here in the Caribbean.
Yes, we are. And Nigel, this is our first recording for the new year, 2022.
Quite correct. I don't know what happened.
It's been a minute. Listen.
Yeah.
We need to be kind to ourselves during this pandemic.
Quite so. Best laid plans. Was he rest of that phrase? But the pandemic really has affected the production of this podcast. Not that we can't use Zoom or technology, but we're humans now. We are in a space where we have to deal with other humans and that kind of stuff.
But
we want to certainly get back onto more frequent updates and things. But as I said, I don't want to promise the world and deliver nothing. So here we are. Welcome back.
Yes. The good news is that we are back. It's 2022. We're in the height of what would have been the carnival season in Trinidad and Tobago, as you guys know. For those who listen to us, you know we are based in Trinidad and Tobago. And for those who don't know, well, we are based in Trinidad and Tobago. And we are having what they're calling a taste of carnival. A little something to whet the appetite.
You're the expert. Let me rephrase this. No, let me say it as it is. You're the expert on the tourism industry here as a journalist in Trinidad, certainly, as well as I've said it a million and one times, the number one entertainment journalist in Trinidad and Tobago, and possibly the Caribbean.
So good for my ego.
There you go. But I mean, let's be honest. Without dwelling too much, this idea of a taste of carnival, I mean, carnival is about people and interacting. It's not necessarily simply a showcase of shows. And I gather from a lot of the talk on the street and social media, it hasn't caught on the way that it could have. And there are problems in management and, the annual problem of, well, how much money they get and allocation and budget and transparency. But let me know your thoughts, if you don't mind.
Well, that aside, I think people really gravitated to the events that were put on. And so far, in the last minute, we had a lot of artists announcing shows.
Yeah.
Voice announced a show, and literally within hours of tickets going on sale, they were sold out.
Yeah.
And the National Carnival Commission, which is the body here responsible for overseeing National Carnival events, they put on a few shows. The Kings and Queens of Carnival preliminaries were very well subscribed and was amazing. I think the taste of carnival really just was to give people hope that carnival will return in a major way, and give people the opportunity to get out of the house. And people really wanted to get out of the house. I think as the world opens back, a lot places seem to be back to normal, and people have been traveling and seeing what's going on outside. So I don't think people are that concerned about staying indoors anymore. They're trying to learn to live with COVID-19. And people welcome the opportunity to get out, So I think in some ways, about the bubble and bacchanal and all that aside, and the introduction of the pods, all of that aside, people welcome the opportunity to get out, see artists, and feel like carnival, I think it did what it was supposed to do. And we're going to look forward to 2023. Plenty of us already looking forward to 2023.
Oh, yes.
To touch the road once more.
2023 was on the calendar of everybody, certainly in Trinidad and around the world, who wants to come to Trinidad. But as you said, a number of these artists put on their own shows. Basically, they became their own producers. And you said vibing with Voicy. I think that was the show.
Huge.
I'm sure Second Star is having a show. I think Iowa George is having a show. So that there's clearly a lot of interest, certainly by the popular, interest by the public for concerts by the popular artists, certainly. But,
Yes.
But as I said, I'm not denigrating the idea of a taste of carnival. The NCC has its job to do. And of course, stakeholders want to play mass, clearly. It's just that the public who plays the mass are antsy to do more than just go to a show or go to a fete.
Yes.
But it also kind of shows to me the idea that the dominance of a concert or a fete as opposed to a show. Now, you did say that the Kings and Queens show was well subscribed. And yes. I did read some reports about the popularity of that show. And I'm sure they had some Calypso shows and some tents and that kind of stuff at the Queens Hall and other places.
And there was Pan as well.
Yes.
There were showdowns. Mm-hmm. I know Caesars, Jews from Caesars Army, Jews Sobian from Caesars Army mm-hmm. staging a show, another production, theatrical mm-hmm. production. Again, and I love that the absence of carnival allowed space for something like that yes. to develop. I really believe we need more mm-hmm. product carnival. It's not just fete, mm-hmm. it's not just mass. We need a diversity of products that would target all sorts of demographics that would be in that given Trinidad would come to Trinidad. And you know, they want something that's unique. And I believe we, with our deep, rich history, mm-hmm. have to offer unique and diverse products. I really love that he stuck with that theatrical production. We saw Tribe do Lavwe last year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're planning to do something later on this year with another Lavwe. They didn't do it in time for Carnival, but I love that the space has allowed for that to happen. So we're seeing things happening.
Yeah, as the kind of, I guess economists call it disruption. Of course, COVID-19 created this disruption and a space for, as you rightly say, for other events and other things to happen in the carnival, and I hope they become the norm in 2023. But the other thing that you also said was how the idea that people are going to be traveling in 2023 and the idea of our artists finally getting an opportunity to travel, because there are some jurisdictions abroad that don't have the restrictions that we do have, certainly in North America. You know about Florida, a lot of our artists went to Florida. But I remember reading that Boris Johnson had stopped all the restrictions in the United Kingdom. Right?
Yes.
Absolutely not. So no, you don't have to wear no mask if you're taking the subway, well, the tube, I think they call it there, among other things. And this is the weakest pivot, but not in the UK. I know that we were able to have a conversation with an important Caribbean DJ in the United Kingdom on BBC One Extra. And I have to thank you, Laura, for getting onto this podcast, because I think that was an important conversation. And I really look forward to hearing what he has to say about our music across the pond, because we've done a lot of focus, certainly in North America and Canada and USA, and as it was, and certainly in the region. But we don't really have a voice out there in England or in the European continent to get us to tell us what happens and how does soca work there and what can happen, or soca dance, or all the music as it was for Caribbean music works there. So, Laura, since you brought him to the show, introduce him, please.
Well, you know, so today, everyone, we are having Shawnee B on our podcast, and I'm very glad that he agreed to be on our podcast. For those who don't know, Shawnee B is an award-winning broadcaster with BBC One Extra. He, for those who may have seen his very popular two things on YouTube that are pretty popular, even more popular than he already is. He did an interview with Buju when Buju came out of jail. He was one of the first people who did an interview with Buju. And he also hosted a session with Protégé's signees on Protégé's label, Lila Ike, Jadis, Naomi Cowan, and Savannah. He had done this, I can't remember the name of the project that Protégé did, but anyway, he featured these ladies on BBC One Extra. He does a lot of live acoustic, you know, things with dancehall artists and soca artists. And he's very, very popular. He's also a Grammy Award-winning producer. He is, you know, he started off as a DJ, his dancehall hip-hop remixes. He still DJs. He travels the world. He creates content. He writes for the Voice newspaper in the UK. And this is what attracted my attention to him. I mean, I'm following Shawnee B. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yes, that's great.
He wrote a column, Nigel, in the Voice UK called The Caribbean Calling, where he laid out a 5-point plan to get music back on track. Now, he is such an advocate for Caribbean culture. I believe he has Caribbean heritage, and I suppose he will tell us about exactly what his Caribbean heritage is. So he wrote this 5-point plan, where he says that he believes that Caribbean music has a big seat, has a seat at the big table. People ask him if Caribbean music does, and he say yes, it does. And he cited Popcorn Show in Gambia recently, which was completely sold out.
Like a stadium full of people.
Yes, in the Haiti pandemic. And he spoke about the massive influence Caribbean culture has on the lifestyle of people all over the world, not just in the UK. And you know, this 5-point plan, just give the gist of it. So he spoke, and a lot of the things he said, we have been saying here on this podcast. Yes. He talked dropping the ego and pride, you know, being authentic and dropping the pride and giving fans their money's worth. Yes. When it's to putting on a show. He talk about the lack of music management, the need for a Caribbean artist to have good management.
Big pet peeve of mine.
Yes. He talk about how DJs and presenters having a true passion for the music. He talked about people just following trends to be relevant rather than staying true to themselves. He spoke about appreciating your own worth, about having systems and structures. And Nigel, this is the thing you always talk about, the need for us to have proper structures in place. Music to go somewhere. So a lot of what he wrote resonated with me, and I shared the article with you, Nigel, and resonated with you as well. I reached out to Shoni B, and he agreed to come on to talk about you know, about Caribbean music in the UK, yes, and how what he thinks, to just delve a little deeper into how what he thinks needs to be done for Caribbean music to really take off. And this is what we are all about here on this podcast, really about the business of music and trying to find offer solutions for Caribbean music to really become a true force in the world. We influence so much in the Caribbean with the rest the way they move, the way they sound. You know, we're exotic to everyone, but our music needs to be, and we're talking Caribbean music, not just dancehall, not just soca. Caribbean music, because you all know this is a rich region full of diverse sounds. So yeah, so we have Shoni B.
Shoni B. One extra.
Shoni B. So Shoni B, thank you so much for being here on Music Matters, the Caribbean Edition podcast. We are really, really happy to have you here. And for those who may not be familiar with your name, Shoni, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you have roots in the Caribbean? What are they? And tell us a little bit about what you do to rap Caribbean music.
So my name is Shoni B. I wasn't born in the Caribbean. I was born in the UK. I'm a 70s baby. I would say like first stroke, second generation, technically. Yeah, first stroke generation, UK born. My mother comes from Jamaica. And that's my connection to Jamaica. She comes from a place called St. Andrew Lawrence Tavern up in the hills just outside of Kingston. And my dad comes from Dominica, Point Michelle. Yes.
Nice.
Dominica, don't ask me to speak no patwa, please. I will embarrass myself. So and I've got strong family ties out in Dominica as well, like a lot of cousins, uncles and stuff like that that I'm closely connected to. I always tell people that when I was younger, I knew more of my Dominican side when I was younger.
Right.
Really was at like my uncles and my aunties when I was younger. So I grew up on a diet of like Lord Kitchener, Mighty Sparrow. My dad was a massive, you can't sing a Mighty Sparrow song to me and I don't know it. So I grew up on all of that kind of stuff, all the old school Calypso stuff. Obviously Carnival, Steel Pan, all that kind of stuff was big to me. But I suppose when I got older and reggae and dancehall was a little bit more cooler, I kind of slowly gravitated over to that, even though my love as a teenager, I loved hip hop. So Eric B and Rakim, Public Enemy, Ultramagnetic MCs. I grew up on a diet of all of that kind of stuff. But it was in 1985 when my brother came over to England. My brother that grew up in Jamaica, he introduced me to a sound system tape called Kilimanjaro.
Though
my older brother in the UK was a Saxon fan, I think it was that Jamaican element that really caught me. And yeah, it kind of just progressed into that. And then teenage years started to roll around town with a couple of Jamaican guys, and then their influence on me, it was skyrocketed. So yeah, I was British born, but a lot of Caribbean influence around me.
Nice. And you had that real eclectic West Indian upbringing when it comes to music, because in Caribbean, we listen to everything. 100%. Your teenage life sounds like mine. You're young, you're into calypso, and then you're into soca, and then you go into the dancehall and dub. Well, dub as it was known back in the day. And then you go into hip hop, you discover hip hop, and like, oh my God. Yeah. So it sounds like we had the same trajectory.
There's also just, obviously, growing up in a Caribbean household, it wasn't just like reggae either. It was like the Brooke Bentons, Nat King Cole.
Yes.
All that kind of stuff, like, yes, was a massive, massive part of my growing up. So I have like a very eclectic influence of music in my household back in the day.
Nice. So when you became a DJ, and I read somewhere you were doing hip hop remixes, mm-hmm, and you were infusing some dancehall into them. Is that how you made your name?
Yeah, well, pretty much so. My older brother, I had two older brothers. I had one that was born in Jamaica and one that was born over in the UK. He had a sound system. And that was my first kind of introduction into me wanting to be a DJ, seeing him with his friends creating a sound system, making speaker boxes. I always remember standing outside the bedroom, in his bedroom, when they would be practicing. And I'd just be kind of like listening and wanting to get into the bedroom with like the big boys to be able to practice when they were mixing all the rest of it. And I see it as part of my training, actually, because what would happen is when they finished their session, all the records would be laid out and my brother would be like, right, put them away in the right sleeves and then you will get 30 minutes on the turntables. And that was the way that I started my actual DJ career. And I was buying my hip hop records as a young kid, doing like a post round or something like that, or selling sandwiches at school and buying my records and then getting more time on the turntables. And then it was the Jamaican guys that I started to roll around town with when I was around 14, 15. They were like, if you can do that with hip hop, because I was scratching and mixing, right, if you could do that with hip hop, if you was to do that with dancehall and reggae, you will have something. So it was two worlds that merged together. And I just loved all of it. So I just continued doing what I was doing. And pretty much that's how I made my name as the remix kid around town.
Wow. And now with BBC One Extra, you are really promoting Caribbean music. Really, like, you, I am so envious of you, can I tell you? I watch you going to Jamaica and having all these acoustic sessions with all these artists. You did an interview with Buju. You look kind of nervous throughout that interview, eh, Shoni B, I have to tell you.
I promise you, I wasn't nervous. I wasn't nervous. I promise you, I wasn't nervous.
You look so. You did look so.
You did look like that. Oh, he is nervous. But you are repping for Caribbean music. And one of the reasons we invited you to come on our podcast, and we're so, so appreciative of you accepting our invitation, is because you did a piece for The Voice UK, mm-hmm, about Caribbean music and what you think Caribbean artists need to do in order to have a seat at the table. Because you believe, you said resoundingly, yes, you believe that Caribbean music has a place at the table. So before we get into a little bit of into the what you wrote, can you just explain to us or maybe paint a picture for us of what the Caribbean scene looks like in the UK? Is there a market for Caribbean music? What are the genres that are really big and popping out there?
Caribbean music is the foundation of everything. Because Caribbean music is the engine behind everything. If you think about sound system culture, where we are now, I have sound systems at festivals, and you've got people that still create sound systems. Like, that is from Caribbean music. The bass line that you hear in the music, even now in 2022, is Caribbean music based. Sound effects that every DJ fires off over. It doesn't matter what genre of music that you play. It's Caribbean, taking out the bass and getting to the drop. That is Lee Scratch Perry and these great engineers. Like, it's everything about Caribbean music. And now, even if you think about the way people promote parties, everything is like a carnival. Like, if you're talking about the a vibe and atmosphere, it's a carnival atmosphere that you want to go for. So that, for me, Caribbean music is the basis of everything, especially in the UK, because if you think about the genres of music that came out of the UK, from jungle music that went to drum and bass, that is an international sound, originally that they were using Caribbean bass lines, reggae bass lines in that music. You listen to garage music, or that's gone into grime and then into drill. This is a culture of kids standing up behind a mic and spitting lyrics. Where does that come from? Is that not sound system culture to you? So everything, it derives from that. You listen to Afrobeats, and people are frightened to say it, but you hear dancehall all the way and soca all the way through Afrobeats. It's the drums. It's our drums. It's the sound of Black people. It's all of us. You get what I'm saying? So the Caribbean music can't be taken out of it. And as a DJ, I know this for a fact, because if I turn up at a party, I don't care what kind of party it is. Let me play some reggae, dancehall, and soca. That's when the party begins.
Party mashup.
I challenge anybody to, let's go to a party and play Skinny, Marshall, Bungie, Family. I don't care who's in there. It's like, that's the energy. So my thing is about, how do we have all of that influence, but how do we not have the economic power with it? And I always say, my manager bought me a Marcus Garvey book, and it always has to start with us. We have to show our own economic power before anybody else is going to start looking at us. And that's fundamentally what Garvey was talking about to a certain extent. And we have to create, I suppose the last point that I made in the piece that I made was, we have to create our business. We have to have our systems and our structures. And I think that through the rise of Afrobeats, that we have definitely seen where we have not done that. Because you can see through systems and structures and management and booking agents and working to time and having like organizations that, like, people in the right places doing the right things, basically, you can see how it's worked. Obviously, they've got the numbers, but we've got influence. How do we turn that influence into numbers? We've got to fix our house first, though. We have to, because we know Wagwan is not right, quite right. There is good parts, but we know that there's parts that's not quite right.
Tell us, if you don't mind, is Nigel here, one or two things that we have to definitely fix.
The top of my list was ego. Ego, pride. And we have to realize that I've seen so many promoters, and I've dabbled in promoting, so many promoters put on shows, and the cost definitely comes to the UK once you put on flights, visas, work permits, hotels, transportation, per day. Like, it's phenomenal amounts of money to put on a show. And I know, come Monday morning when some artists go home, it's the promoters that are left like bawling. And there's going to obviously be massive success stories. And those are the ones that can do the business the way that they're doing it. But I feel that there's a one-hit wonder culture sometimes that we get in our music, that the minute you get a one-hit, ready for fly, gone, big show, money off around this, that, the other. That's a promo tour. That really should be just a promo tour if you're going to look to do that. And you should, the finances should reflect that as well. And it helps others on the other side that are trying to promote the music to be able to do things like that. Like, I've had artists that come over to the UK, and once they've done their show and they're around town, there's no itinerary for promotion.
That's crazy.
That's,
you know, as you say that, I was thinking, that strategy I've seen in Shensia's case, Nyla Blackman's case, they both had the same strategy. When they came out, they didn't immediately go on tour. And their management, they kept it local. Then when they had a few hits, they started expanding to the region.
Regional, yeah.
Then when they had a good little catalog together, then they started going out of the region. But you're right, they are artists. As soon as they get one song, that's it. They are
tough. You have to learn how to build. And because there's so many people that are chasing it in our world as well, as in promoters that may not actually be promoters. And you see the effect of that when you see the show, no good production, like nobody knows what they're actually kind of doing. And I know it sounds like I'm being quite judgmental.
You're being real.
I live this day to day, day to day. And I suffer this because I may be a DJ on an event. I may be a host on an event because it flopped and it ain't been done correctly. I don't get paid. That's affecting my business. I never asked you to put on the show and not do it in the right and correct manner. And then if I start turning around and say, well, you know what? I don't actually want to work in that environment anymore. Shani, get bougie. That's not good. So rather than get bougie, that's why I wrote that piece to say, listen, let's have a look at each other, see what I go on, and have a conversation. And do you know what? I was so fearful to write it.
Why?
I wrote it, I read it, and I let a few people read it. And they were like, we know you, and you cuss about this all the time. And we hear others cuss about it all the time, Shuri. So there must be truth in Wagwan. But sometimes when you are writing a piece like that, even the editors at The Voice were like, you sure you want to put this out? But it's been so well received, like genuinely, it's been so well received that I'm so grateful for that, to know that we are looking at Wagwan and we want to do better, because that's the only way that you can do better, if you can look at yourself and say, right, we know what the faults are. And there's a whole raft of new artists and new teams that are coming out that are looking at the success of somebody like Shensia and saying to myself, right, this is the way to do it. Ramesh has done a phenomenal job. With all of his team, the way he goes about it, he's a promotion guru. Yeah. So people need to look at people like that and say, okay, this is the way to do it. The other thing is, there's a lot of people doing it that people are not paying attention to. And we're paying attention to the wrong people sometimes, because hype in our world is a dangerous thing, but it's something that we all go for. You need a fakali if you have the hype. But hype is such a dangerous thing. I feel that having a hype with no substance is crazy. There's some people that have got so much substance, but don't even have a clue of how to move that substance into hype. What we need to do is bring those two worlds together. How do we do that?
I have been concerned about something that you mentioned in the article, with the quality of management, because you were talking about they missed opportunities because of poor management. But I'm also thinking that there's a kind of HR deficiency in terms of the people who become managers. As you said, there are people who call themselves booking agents, and they call themselves managers, but they're really and truly just hangers-on, kind of entourage people and things. And there's something that clearly that the United Kingdom has in terms of, you all have institutions that teach the business of music, right? Kenda Hoji, somebody I know, he teaches, I think, at university. But the big thing is the manpower deficit in the business of music. I'm assuming it's a universal thing. Do we overcome that by insisting everybody who wants to get into the business of music goes to university, or we just pick it up by liming with somebody or dealing with Romesh or whoever the managers are? How do we get there? Is it go to school and learn it, or just learn it by osmosis?
Everything that I've done, I've never learned at school. Nothing. Everything has been self-taught. I am the original Kanye West college dropper. I did one day at college and I was like, this is not for me. But I was determined, not to say that I didn't go into other institutes and courses and go and learn certain things, but a lot of what I did was self-learned. I wouldn't encourage people to go and do it the way that I did it. Some of us will be lucky and some of us won't be lucky in that manner. I had a certain thirst to want to win, so I knew that that would work for me, that I can make myself get up in the morning, a certain discipline to be able to say, right, today I need to go.
Discipline.
So, exactly. So you need a certain discipline. I learned through experience. That's the way that I learned best. I was a book smart youth, but I hated school environment. Give it to me in my hand. Let me do what I'm doing with it, boom, that's me, learn on the job. But then there's the other side that education is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And this is controversial that I say, especially for the UK.
Say it.
Because when I was growing up, it used to be a bit of a joke, like the African parents would tell their youths, don't hang around with those West Indian boys. Go to school, go to university, go to college. A lot of them youths that did go to the university and go to college, not to say they were out on the block still, but they were at school, like educating themselves. And I don't feel, and I'm talking from my own personal experience here, so it may not be for everybody. I don't feel that as many of my West Indian friends actually did that. So then there may be a generation of youths that were winning in the 90s as Caribbean youths them and whatever that didn't educate and school themselves. Or there was a generation of youths that were being schooled that have come out, because a lot of the youths that I see, media studies, business mm-hmm. studies, they got certain things to their name. They got certain tools to be able to now go out mm-hmm. onto the, I feel that as West Indian youths, and I'm prime example, I just went out there and just did it like that. You get what I'm saying? So I feel that there may be a slight gap in that. And I can say that for the UK. Obviously, mm-hmm. for the Caribbean, it would be a whole lot different. Mm-hmm. But how easy access is that kind of education in the Caribbean?
Not very.
How easy access is basic education in the Caribbean?
Well, basic education
we have, yes. Yeah.
Because it's mostly free.
It's free for up to secondary school, yeah. And even tertiary in some areas. Yeah.
In some countries, it's free, so it's accessible. But
I still hear in some of the songs that my mom and my dad couldn't afford to send me to school.
Well, that could be because they can't afford. I mean, while education may be free, some people can't afford to buy uniforms or buy books.
And school books.
Or pay the passage to go to school.
Mm-hmm. So then it's still not free.
And I know that's so funny. That's a discussion that was in Trinidad recently when one of our Miss World candidates spoke about poverty in Trinidad, and people were so upset when she said people can't access healthcare. We have to explain, even though healthcare is free, if I can't afford a taxi fare to get to the health center, then
exactly
mm-hmm. that's a problem, right?
It's a problem.
So yeah. But even with the music education, and you know, Nigel and I, we've spoken about this so many times, about the fact that the industry is really, we don't have an industry, we have a hustle.
Mm. So small money hustle.
It's a small money hustle. And I remember Iowa George telling me, you know, once you have one big song, that's it. One big song. And so everybody's chasing after the one big song, and then that's it. So, and then they're roping their partners to manage them or to go on the road with them. But there's no real experience, that you're not hiring quality, you're not thinking about yourself as a business, you're not strategizing. It's just, I have a big song, let me go on tour, let me make as much coin as I could possibly make. And that's it.
I can understand that 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
100%. Especially if I put myself in a frame of mind of a Caribbean. As an English youth, it's different. The government will look out for you. You get little social welfare money and this, that, the other. To a certain extent, you get looked after. In the Caribbean, I can understand fully why that one song can change your life. And I can understand. It's just that, yo, I need this song to get out there, to go and get this money, to move my family out of the area that they're in, to make sure that my youth then can go to school, that mummy have something now. And do you get what I'm saying? So I can...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fully appreciate that mentality.
Mm.
But I feel that now we've moved to another place.
To another level.
Because the world is, certain things that was not accessible before are fully accessible now. And we are now, if we can say that the internet is giving us all level playing field to be able to get access to the same people, that means that the way we present ourselves and how we go about our business cannot be of the old manner, because you've got people that are hustling even your own product better than you now.
That's quite true. Talking about hustling your product, and I'm interested in finding out, in the UK market, what the big Caribbean artists who are like making it big, as it was? Who's a regular spin on Shawnee B's radio program?
Oh, the Caribbean. all of the usuals. Obviously, majority of my playlist on Thursday night on One Extra is definitely dancer. But I also understand and appreciate the fact that I have a responsibility as a Caribbean person that there isn't that much Caribbean music on the radio, 100%. So I try to play it as much that comes from the other regions as well. I can do probably a lot more. I wish I had a lot more time to do it as well.
Do you have enough product? Just out of curiosity, outside of dancehall, do you have enough product?
Oh, too much product. I am definitely tapped in, like, people like Nessa Preppy, Nyla Blackman, Bungie, Marshall, Kez, I speak to, is it Jadel? I speak to her.
Jadel, on
Insta. A couple of the Trini youth, them that do the Trini Bad stuff, boy. I have conversations with Swanee, from time to time. Zebby's team has been in contact with me of recent times as well. I've done a freestyle.
Like, yes, you did a cypher.
Yeah, I did a cypher. Yes. That went nuts.
That was so nuts. Good. Oh my God. Orlando completely flattened the whole place.
Orlando. Hey, Shani B. BBC. Fast. Mayans. Young Kings. Become yourself. Loud. Trinibad. Boom.
Static and them. So I'm linked in with all of them. I speak to Motto sometimes. I try and get around as much as possible. It's because I understand the responsibility that I have. And I try to use my voice in places as well, not just to speak up for Jamaica, but to speak up for when I see a moment in the Caribbean. So for instance, Patrice just recently, Mind Your Business.
Mm-hmm.
I love that record. I could see what that record for me is one of the big songs for 2022.
That record could blow up. That record
is.
And I fought for that to get onto the One Extra playlist.
Nice. You know,
that's
Shani,
the first Caribbean record that's gone, like first soca record really that's gone onto the playlist. Well, not actually the first, because last year I also got Marshall, the party song that he had. I got that onto the playlist as well. So
when I
feel those moments to be able to bring it to that next place, then I try my very hardest and try my very best to reflect it on my radio show as much as possible. And I promise you, like, if Corona didn't lock down, one of my plans was to do an island trip from Trinidad to Grenada and get freestyles all around, but just Corona locked down. So right now, I'm kind of like, I've even gone to Jamaica for 2 years. I'm totally reset. I'm starting fresh.
I like that. And that's one of the things I appreciated about your column, that you made the distinction that you were not talking about any one island, that you're talking about the Caribbean. Because I feel like when people talk about Caribbean music, they mostly just mean Jamaica, right? Dancehall and reggae. But there's so much music in the Caribbean. Each island has its own genre of music that they're known for. I mean, a lot of it is like sub genres of soca, but everybody has their own history, their own musical history that has influenced the music. And there's much that is not even being discussed outside of the Caribbean, but it's so big.
I say Caribbean because I am Caribbean. So I'm Jamaican and Dominican. I'm very proud of both of those heritages right there. My cousin, Jude Deloney, from Dominica, was the Calypso Monarch, I believe, in 2020. So,
nice.
It runs through the blood, you know?
Yes. There you go. So
I fly the flag proudly. As I've got older, I've realized the responsibility that is on me to make sure that happens. And maybe the balance wasn't as good, but, hindsight, and I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, nah. And more importantly is that I believe the lines have blurred musically, worldwide, but definitely in the Caribbean. Because if I listen to certain rhythms that come out of Trinidad and St. Lucia, sometimes they sound more dancer than the dancer.
It is, yes, yes.
Of Jamaica.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you may get what I call a dash out rhythm, early morning, ladies and going wild. Those rhythms sound like soca rhythms at the best of time.
Yes.
And now you've seen the rise of soca music being able to be played more openly, and it's a moment in dancehall party. And then you have the Trinidad movement in Trinidad, which is dancehall, exactly the same as what's coming out of Jamaica. And then that's not even to say that there isn't dancehall coming out of... I get hit up for that. When I did the Trinidad cypher, the rest of the islands then was running in. Surely. Oh, God. I'm getting... Oh. Even Guyana.
Yes.
Everybody. And I'm fully, and I've only got one pair of ears. And there's only so much time in the day, and there's so much music out there. And I try my very best to see what I can grab at. I watch and see what I'll go on online. So for me, so like to represent everything is so important. Also, the other side of it is this. I'm a DJ, and my job is to find new talent and to find new music. So when I see everybody gravitating over there, is it not smart business to start looking elsewhere?
Of course.
I don't just look in the Caribbean. I have a very strong presence in Africa as well, in Ghana, in Gambia, in Kenya. There's so many crazy youths out there doing like amazing things. We do cyphers that touch the whole world. So we're trying to join forces with everybody to be able to create this energy and this movement to be able to move Caribbean music. Because if it's down to the Caribbean people alone, we ain't going to be able to get those numbers to which part we need to get to.
We need the whole world to get the numbers that makes sense to France. Correct. Well,
so if you love doubles, if you love roti, if you love jerk chicken, if you love whatever, then hear what I'm telling you. This is where you got to show that love and start hitting the button. And we got to start talking about it. And that's what I'm trying to do.
One of the points you had made in your list for the voice was talking about asking, do we need to chase the sound for the pound? That has been one of the big criticisms right now in the Caribbean, in it happening in reggae, it happening in dance, what happening in soca, where people talk about how far the music has moved away from its sound, from what it is, from its core. And as new generations get into, producing music, they use all the influences they had growing up from the US, from wherever, and they put it into their music. And I think, like, especially with soca, there's always been probably a belief that we have to do what the rest of the world doing in order for the world to accept us, because maybe they don't really understand what we do. They can't contextualize the music. They can't relate to it. So it always seems to be like a chicken and egg situation. Like, should we not incorporate the sounds of the world? Should we stick to what we have? Would the world accept it?
I'm a producer as well in it.
Yeah.
So my thing, and I'm also Libran. So my life is about balance. As a creative, do what you want to do. And I firmly believe that, do what you want to do as a creative. But then we've also got to protect a rich heritage and history of music that seemingly somehow I don't hear as much. There's certain artists that I would love to hear on a proper rubber dub rhythm. Do you know what I'm saying to you? A little bit more. Not to say that they don't do it, but a little bit more. And sometimes I feel, I always, because I conversate with artists as well, off record. And they're just, especially in reggae, I hate when I hear somebody say, I'm doing an album for Europe. I'm like, what do you mean you're doing a Europe album, a reggae album? I'm like, no, you're just doing an album for yourself. Like, you don't need to like think about it in that kind. Just do what you're doing. And somewhere along the lines, it seems like the sound that we grew up with and loved, and you have the gray head and Palmer Fierce, I don't want to come across old. Because the funniest thing is, I really love the new stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look in the big wide world and I see, when we say that other artists are taking our sound and whatever, it's not the sound of right now. And the sound that they're taking is the sound of before. And they seem to be winning with that sound. So that's where it's like, I'm trying to work it out somewhere along the lines. I'm trying my hardest to work it out. And it's just little things like, and this is crazy to show you why Caribbean music, it has to be Caribbean music, because now jugglings are more known in soca music
than in dancehall music.
Yes. Dancehall, yes.
Yep.
You'll more see the big eyes them line up toe for toe.
Yes.
In soca music than dancehall music.
And yes.
The funniest thing is, I always say this about jugglings. They are the A&R of our music. So you've got 5 songs on a rhythm. We all pick the one that we believe, for instance, the Patrice.
Mine is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not to say there isn't other cuts on the rhythm that's any good, no good, but that's the one that we've chosen. Carry On, again, we chose that. And The Farm and Happy. And that's, it's little things like that that I just think that we have to keep remembering. But then on the flip side, especially for dancehall, like everyone talks about the 90s sound. There's been quite a considerable amount of 90s dancehall-esque rhythms that have come out. And what annoys me now is I don't see them getting the support.
Wow.
So has the audience evolved?
Well, now I said it on air the other day. I goes, look how me, I play it like half a word, a book, dancehall. No trap drums, no rolling hats, nothing like that. Now we're going to see if this is what people really want, because now the offering is starting to come out a little bit more. There's been so much of those kind of rhythms that have come out. Now I'm waiting to see what is going to be the response, because I also do, because I spend so much time and do so much work with the young artists. I understand them as well. And I listen to them, I talk to them. And that's what we have to have. We have to have conversation. I suppose that, like, out of anything that I want more than, like, and the conversation is happening, starting to happen. The merging of the different generations and the way that we think and all the rest of it. Because you've seen Morgan Heritage with Richard and Joshie. And so we're starting to see it. And I think it's a frustration of two camps. Because here we are, I'm 47 years of age. And I talk about this all the time in my interviews when I talk to people. I'm 47 years of age. When my dad was 47 years of age, he weren't discussing no damn music.
It's true. It's true.
He had tapped out of that a long time ago. He might play dominoes, drink him rum, watch him cricket.
Mm-hmm.
He don't care about party like that. He does not care who's trending and whatever. And I tell people, we that are of the slightly older trenders, we are like a social experiment.
Indeed. Indeed.
Because we are the first of our kind that still care.
Yeah.
About Wagwan.
That is true. And the 3 of us in the same generation,
Do not do it. But I hear what you're saying.
But you're right. That is right. That is you're so correct. Right. We are a social experiment. You're right. I never looked at it that way before.
Mm-hmm. I'm having a conversation with kids my age about Skilly Bang.
Yeah.
And I'm having a proper conversation with them as well about this. And I'm not by myself here.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the people that you probably hear complaining and talking online and whatever probably come from our generation. We're the ones that are looking out against it, where when I was listening to Bounty and Beanie in 91, 92, 93, my mother and my father couldn't care less. There was no friction of when they're going to do their thing, they're just doing their thing. And then again, the next part of it is the internet.
Yes.
Before, only a very few of us had voice to talk.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people talking at the party right now.
Everybody has a voice, yeah.
Everybody's got a voice.
Yeah. And that's there's a role for us. There's clearly a role for us who,
hence the podcast,
you know, could talk to the past, talk to the present, and advise on the future.
The problem that I have with some of the young, though, I could talk of experience because my son is 16 years of age. Everything is our generation, this generation, where I believe that we had a respect for
the generation before.
Yes. Correct, definitely.
Checked this. I said this to somebody the other day. When I was 16, 17, I couldn't wait to get into certain big people dance. Couldn't wait. You want a big man dance? Mm-hmm. By your Heineken or your Jagan or whatever. Mm-hmm. You want to go which part of the big people them there? You want Jim Screechy into the dance? Our kids will not be complained which part we there. Go where?
No. Tell me about it.
Nope.
They don't want to be amongst us. The minute my son can tap out, he's gone.
Yep.
And he's in his world. So it's like even, because we do a lot of comparing the way it used to be. And it's a totally different world.
Yeah, that is so true. I have a 17-year-old son who's about to turn 18. And yeah, he will only go with me if I could get him in free.
Yeah, you're the bank.
That's about it.
Yeah. As you're talking about different worlds and different, well, not different generations, this is my kind of final question to you, that in the sense that radio, I believe, still has an important role in proliferating Caribbean music, whether it's here in the Caribbean and certainly in the UK, right? And you certainly have an important role in that. But you said something earlier in our conversation about one or two soca songs, you had to fight to get it onto the playlist, as it was, into programming. Just explain to me very quickly, how does music get onto your program, and how does music get onto the BBC, other different BBC stations? Is there a program director in a different room who listens to this, or you, as a selector, does your job?
In this year's 20 years, I've been on BBC Radio 1 Extra. Hmm. Other than the daytime shows that I may cover for other DJs, if they're short on DJs, I've always selected my own music. And even when I've done daytime shows officially, I had a split of 60-40. I fight for mine. Like, I always tell them, like, I'm a DJ. I travel up and down the country, around the world. I know what people want. Exactly. I've been doing this for far too long. Like, you can't sit down with your computer and your algorithms and tell me about music. And now that I've worked in record shops, I've DJed, played sound system, been a radio DJ, I'm a marketing machine when it comes to understanding people and music. So I always fight to be able to play my playlist or shift around music, because that's the other thing. When playlists get played on the radio, it's not a person that is saying, I'm going to play that song after that and then that song after that. And it's a computer that's just generated a bunch of records and said, play them in this
play
order.
This and also
that. There's no feel to that. I was always encouraged from the very first program manager that I had. You're the DJ. They've just given you a bunch of music. You curate it. And they use this word curate.
Yeah.
I'm a selector. That's what the word is.
Man, a selector. Yeah.
I'm a selector. And that to have that badge from where we come from, for a man to say he's a bad selector, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was a badge of honor.
Tell me. Mm-hmm.
It's a badge of honor. So I'm a selector, whether I'm on radio, in a dance, liquor house party, driving in my car, I create music for a mood. And that's why I think that radio will always be so important, because it's human.
Thank you.
And thank you. A lot of playlists, even when I curate a playlist, I tell, because I've done Spotify playlists, I do a Pandora playlist, I'm going to be starting an AudioMap playlist. I don't playlist it just based on new music. Mm-hmm. I playlist it based on, right, there's a flow. Mm-hmm. I've always, to master the art of a 90-minute mix tape, to make somebody turn it round, that's a special art.
Yeah.
To master the art of having somebody listen to you on the radio and then sit in their car, in the car park of shopping, and them can't come out, that's an art.
Yes, yes,
and
it
that's
is.
That's the art. That,
yes, it
the
is.
Art of keeping you in a dance.
Yes.
You know how much woman go get jacket?
Yes.
And I'm looking at you like, you're not going nowhere yet. I mean, I got to find something for keep you. That's the art. And for me, that's where I always get to express that on the radio as well. Like, that's, so for me, radio would never die. And I think we saw that during the whole lockdown, COVID kind of. Yes. Thing. that we were speaking to people. I found a new love for radio. My studio was always, I'm in my studio now, and it was always actually set up to do radio broadcasting. But the day we went into lockdown, I emulated the sound from One Extra, and I was broadcasting from my studio. And it was like that year, that 18 months was probably the most fun that I've had broadcasting, because I knew that I had an audience that is listening, and they actually want more than just music as well. They want to hear me talk. They want to, we was going through a time of George Floyd and all the madness.
Black Lives Matter, everything.
Yeah. Right.
Myself and a colleague, DJ Ace, did a show on the Blackout Tuesday on radio. We crossed the picket line, because everybody said, if you're black and you're working in the music business on that Tuesday, you're not working. And they asked us to do a radio show on that day about George Floyd and the effects that it's having on people and whatever. And myself and the DJ, my colleague Ace, we spoke and we said, all right, we know we're going to be working on that day, but we're not working. Because Shawnee B and Ace works. Maurice Delaney and Ashley walked into that building as two black men and used the platform of radio to speak to the nation.
Wow.
There you go.
I got a call from the second in charge from the BBC. Not One Extra. Mm. Not just radio, the BBC. I got an email from him. We won an award for the best radio program that year.
Boom.
And
it was a conversation that we had, and that's the beauty of radio. And I've learned now to have even more of that kind of conversation, and to be able to select, stroke, curate music around that.
Around those topics.
To really use that. And I suppose that's how I've got to that stage of writing that piece, because I know the responsibility that I have with the platform that I've got, and I've had to man up to it.
You have a responsibility as that Caribbean voice on BBC. Thank you for that.
I promise you, I always sat back, and when people's like, Shawnee B, even when you said, Laura, like Shawnee B fangirl moment, like, I don't, when I'm chatting to you, I'm chatting to my peoples. I never ever saw myself in that kind of light, because I've always just had the passion of playing the music from the Caribbean point of view that I've always had it. Christenings, first communion, this, that, the other. But then as I've grown older, I've realized the stories that go with it and the history that goes with it.
Yeah.
When I look around, when I look left, when I look right, how many of them are like me in this position? If I was on the outside of this building and looking at me on the inside, what would I be saying? What are you doing, young man? What are you doing for your community? How are you representing your people? The little that I can do, I try to show the beauty and the history and the tradition of our people with the music. That's the very best that I try to do.
Yeah, and we appreciate what you do. Completely. And yes, I totally get it. When people approach me with that kind of, oh my God, you were this one, like, what are you talking about? Because we are passionate about what we do, and we just do it. So I completely get it. But it's good to hear it sometimes, right, Shawnee? It's good to know.
You know what?
It's good to know.
It's good to know, and it's made me realize, like, let me tell you this. I could come out of a train station and see a man looking at me. Automatically, I go into Shawnee off the block. Where my watch me for? For clicking on the head and say, Shawnee, he's probably watched the Lila Ike video or the Kamau's video or the rare.
Yes.
I full chop and man, I look back. So I've had to learn all, and I've been doing this forever, but I've had to learn all of that. And then what's the beautiful thing is, especially when people come up to me and it's crazy, they always whisper it, Shawnee, we love what you do, you know. We see what you do, you know. Let's go on, do what you do, big man. We love what you do. And it's like, you can't make the enemies here. Say, yo, it's one of ours on the inside.
And
I feel protected. Even when I lost my computer the other day.
Yes, I saw that.
That's when I really feel the love, because
I saw that it's
the music that I give to people through the technology of a laptop and my hard drives. And
yeah,
I was like, wow, I mean this much to people. Like, I give thanks and I feel God blessed. And
you know what? It's a function of our generation. Our generation learned to just do the work. We weren't about promoting ourselves. Mm-hmm. But we now live in that social media age when it's all about everybody's a brand and it's all about promoting yourself. So people see you through those lens when you just see yourself as, yeah, I just do the work.
But you there's a whole heap more going on. Even sometimes I'll be telling myself, take a picture. I'm starting my podcast, Braca and Chat. I've been editing today, actually. Mm-hmm. I recorded Gramps last week. He's talking all kinds of, And DJ Puffy was over here from Barbados.
Nice.
We did 2 hours with him. And I forgot to take a picture with Puffy. I forgot to tweet or do an Instagram.
They forgot to do it for the gram, man.
And you know what? I forget about all these kind of things because I'm just doing what I've always loved.
Yeah.
The kid off of the block, just play music. And I've just been blessed to get the opportunity to do what I'm doing. And I will always do it from the standpoint of the kid off the block that always wanted that opportunity, that just loved this music, loving people, and just wanted people then to see the beauty, the real beauty in all of this that we work with.
That is excellent. And we thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for that.
Big love from the Caribbean, Shawnee, and thank
much
you
respect
so much
for Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. Much respect.
Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence and your views, and we look forward to talking to you again. Maybe, hopefully, one day we could do it in the UK. Nigel and I, we want to take Music Matters on the road.
Yeah, it's a Trinidad that don't need visa for come to England. You know,
so. No, we don't.
Yeah.
But don't worry.
England is like my second home, so.
But I'm coming over. You know, I've had so much invites from like Marsha, Kev, Bungie, all of them. Shawnee, come. I'm like, Marsha.
You need to come.
Me and Marsha is good friends. And like, he always tells me, Shawnee. But it always just collides in everything else that I've got to do. And I spent so much time in Jamaica. And it's like, am I allowed to go for another week?
You know what?
We have direct flights from Jamaica.
He is having Melee Carnival in Mexico in April.
He's having Carnival in Mexico.
Yes, him and Tribe have teamed up and they're having Carnival in Mexico, in Cancun, at the end of April. I will be there. So, you know, you should come. It will be fun. We'll be seven days in Cancun.
When I first met Marshall said, Shawnee, because I recorded a song with him like at least 25 years ago. I remember going to the studio. And he goes, what I want for soca music, I will never rest until I hear a stadium singing a soca in an endemic manner. Yeah. That will never leave me, ever leave me from when he told me that. Like his passion.
Yeah, he always had a vision. Always had a vision.
That's a goal. Always. I think that's a goal of his generation and probably the earlier Arrow and these other fellows who started at the very beginning, because the idea was to cross over, and that one little ring, that golden, was just slightly out of touch. A number of artists, here, soca artists, Kevin Little from St. Vincent got relatively close at number 4 in the Billboard US charts and then, but they talked about one hit wonders. A lot of American programmers certainly consider Caribbean people as one hit wonders. So that they didn't know much of him. Umi had a number one song in America, and then that was the end of that. Sean Paul has been consistent in terms of having like top 40 hits. Shaggy, I think, also, and he did some like, same significant collaborations. But that is the one downfall as it is in terms of some of the Caribbean artists, the idea of a one hit wonder. But you have to work at it very, very hard. And I know that Marshall has that energy and that stamina. And that is the thing
charisma.
That a lot of artists
he has
don't
charisma.
Have.
Nyla, I had a label with Polydor Records, and like it was our dream to be able to sign music from Nyla, because I did some recording with her over here as well.
What happened? What happened?
She is, as a talent, incredible talent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the label saw the vision that we saw as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that. She's got something. She definitely has got something.
I don't know if there's something in the team that is not helping that move over to the other side. I don't know what it is. I think she's a pop artist.
I think
that's what she started as. She started as a pop artist singing pop songs. That's how she started. Yeah, the soca thing came after, but
I think it's something in the team, Shoni B. And one day over drinks, if you come to Mexico, we can talk about all those things. We will trade secrets.
Like this is what, like somebody, one person came at me on the team, and they said, "You sound like you're talking about Jamaica more than the rest of the Caribbean, and the rest of the Caribbean don't suffer that problem." That's a lie, because I deal with them. Like that's a lie. Like Kez and people like that, the team moves swift. Like when you speak, they come to you for the opportunities. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
I know the difference. There is a difference.
Good there's management.
Real good management. Real good.
Well, you also have to factor in, Shoni, that some people, and I'm not calling any names, but some people just use soca as a vehicle to get themselves out there. They're not really passionate about the genre. So they will jump on any opportunity to get their names out there. Even if it means not singing soca. That's just, you know, that there's so many people in the industry who just soca is just it's the most convenient vehicle now.
Anybody can watch.
Should they get an opportunity? Yeah, should they get an opportunity to make it outside in a big way and they don't have to sing soca, they will happily abandon it.
The one massive problem that I think soca has got, one massive problem, is that none of the artists have really got their own YouTube channels from what I can see.
Very few. Very few, but you're correct.
Listen. Yes.
Like, do you know what? Even in Jamaica, the artists them have got their thing on. They know where their
own channels are. Yeah.
Exactly. Everything goes, and I don't
Kes
know.
Kes has it.
Kes has Marshall his own has. Bungie Marshall. Does not have. Fayan does not have.
No.
Patrice, I think, has a Vivo. Nyla has. You're quite correct. Not everybody has. And certainly, they're about like the top 10, let's call them. They have, but in varying how much product they put onto those channels becomes another thing. Of course, they concentrate
a
lot of time on IG and on Facebook to a little bit to a certain extent. But I think
because I see everything go through Julian Promos, and I don't know nobody from over there. I don't know what the politics is and all the rest of it. But that's all about Lara.
Julian Promos is the biggest aggregator, and I think he has actually dominated to the point that some artists just bypass the idea of having their own channels and just go straight and say, "Julian, here, take this and go away with it."
Rhythm Stream has got that.
Yes,
for reggae.
Yes.
And all the rest of it. But why that's dangerous is because there's no growth then. Do you get what I'm saying? And all good and well for whoever's doing whatever business they're doing and all the rest of it.
And there's no business behind it because all the business goes to Julian.
This is something we have talked about to death on this podcast. This is something I talk about to artists every time I interview an artist. I remember asking Devon Matthews before he died, why are you giving all your music to Devon, Shal, all of them? Why are you giving all your music to Julian's promo? You are the artist. You can build your YouTube channel. Yeah, but I don't have as much subscribers. I see nobody starts off with 1 million subscribers. Exactly. So you have to start and build. I am the artist, how hard it is for me to build my own YouTube? Like
in the Caribbean, YouTube. Sense. In the Caribbean, YouTube is one of the main vehicles.
It is the main vehicle. Because we just got streaming services.
Yeah,
right.
Legal Spotify. Yeah.
I don't know about Trinidad, but I know in Jamaica that the telecommunication companies give bundles that may have YouTube and all the rest.
Let Laura tell you.
They do.
Digicel offers a kind of streaming service as a part of their package. It's a unique service and thing. It doesn't have as much content.
It doesn't eat into your bundle as much.
Yes.
But that's why the youths in Jamaica are getting nuts numbers on their channels. Some of them are probably buying as well. But they're building their own channels. And your YouTube channel, your YouTube Vimeo, is just as important as your Spotify URL or your Apple URL. And if not more important, because everything is visuals right now. and you can then put your own freestyles, your own interviews, your own content, everything. You don't get to see what, I don't know what the deal is, but do they get to see their analytics?
They do. I think the main problem in the Caribbean, and I think it was only Jamaica that had that got the freedom to monetize.
To monetize, yes.
The rest of the Caribbean, we don't yet officially have the ability to monitor. YouTube hasn't given us all the credentials. Yeah. So Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, they haven't given the Caribbean all the credentials to fully monetize. And that's at a government level.
That's beyond the artists. That's really at a government level.
When it comes to YouTube, Jamaica alone has the ability to do that. But the rest of the Caribbean, I think you have to get a certain number and then YouTube will allow you to use AdSense. And so you have to get a certain number of subscribers and then you can start to monetize in some small way. But we don't have the full functionality that Jamaica has, which is part of the problem.
And I'm lazy when it comes to a lot of this stuff myself. But if you're an artist, your YouTube channel, that's like close to your IG channel and all the rest of it. So I just find it strange. And then even then, like, I want to be able to tap in and just find out, and I cuss them in Jamaica about this all the time. What's the top 10 soca songs? Where's a chart?
I know there's a programmer who's actually building a website. Yeah, and I can consult it about it. He has a software that can track all the social as well as streaming channels. But his thing is, how do you count a soca song? He just literally watches it, listens to it, and says, okay, you're soca. I think it goes back even further to the artist and in the mastering. How do we define a soca song? Or is it a song from Trinidad?
There's a girl doing it, Soca Sauce.
One of the things is, because of the ubiquity of YouTube and Apple and the others, they define what the genre is, right? So if you say, okay, what's the number one soca song? And then all of a sudden they say, well, you know, we also separating Bashment from soca. And sometimes we do have control over what is what, right? Yeah. And I think we have to have a kind of standardized definition. I mean, that sounds very generic and probably very vanilla. But like, we know what dancehall is, we know what reggae is, we know what calypso, and we know what soca is. But some other person may say, no, that's not soca, that's Denery Segment, that's Bashment, that's Bouillon, right? And that kind of subgenre splitting, it kind of waters down what is what.
But they are splitting the music like that as well.
Yeah, they are. But Soca Sauce is doing it though. She has soca charts now.
Mm-hmm.
She's been doing it for the last year or so. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want her identity to be known, so it's a girl in Canada, apparently. So she does all these soca. She does soca charts for the website. And she gives you the stats every week. What is the big song? What's the number one song? The top countries that listening to soca and that kind of thing.
Because for me, if you're putting on a soca event, whatever gets played in there, other than what is obviously dancehall, hip hop, and R&B as a break, but whatever gets played in there under Denery, Groovy Soca, whatever, like that's all
that's soca.
For me, that's soca.
Then that it's all soca.
There you go.
That's headline.
Yeah, and then it's all soca.
Underneath, but that's soca. But I feel that whether or not it could work or not, we got to get to that place of Caribbean music now.
We also need to get soca its own category on streaming services. Right now, artist lists it as reggae. It's not reggae.
Yeah,
they don't list it as soca, because if they do, they have to go under world music or whatever the category
as a subgenre of world music. And
so they go under reggae.
Subgenres get added to that list just like that, but there's got to be somebody to campaign for it.
Shawnee,
you know what? I'm actually going to pick up. Hear what I'm saying to you? I'm not even lying to you. I'm going to pick up the phone tomorrow and call the guy at Spotify and say, I've just had an interesting conversation. Hear what now?
Then
I need to rope in the likes of the Marshalls, the Bungees, the Kezzies, all of them to be able to say, hey, well, this is what we need.
Yeah, and they want to. I had this 3 years ago, there's an organization, Trinidad, called Music TT, and they had put out an appeal asking artists to stop registering their music as reggae. I did a story on this, interviewed producers about it, had a conversation with Marshall about it. Everybody would love to stop registering their music as reggae, but again, everybody's looking at their money. Nobody's willing to take the chance to sacrifice the money to make sure we have a category, because it will take a little bit of sacrifice. And our producers told me that flat. They are all about their money. And if they put it as anything else, they're not going to make no money. So
this is so
good luck.
You have a job to do, Shoni. You have a job to do tomorrow, that phone call.
I would never have thought in a day that somebody would happily just take the category of reggae because they're thinking that it lands them into a bigger pool than
somebody. Yeah, mind you, somebody, they all bitch about it, right? They all bitch about it publicly. But understand, they're not doing it.
The tech companies are the ones who actually identified reggae. The tech companies never saw soca. So reggae got it. And that was it. And as, and some of these tech people in the United States, all music from the Caribbean is reggae. Just like all islands in the Caribbean are Jamaica.
But Niger Music, Titi was saying, the argument was, if everybody registers as soca, there'll be enough volume to convince the DSPs to create a category. That's but nobody wants to do it. That's the problem.
If there's no call for it, if there's no call for it, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so Shoni, thank you once again. This has been an amazing discussion. And I know this is not going to be the last time that we three of us speak, because we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot of music.
There's a lot to talk about. And anytime you want to know what's going on in the Caribbean, anytime you want an underground perspective, Shoni, we are free and available to chat with you anytime.
Listen,
and I hope to see you somewhere this year. There's a carnival happening somewhere, Shoni.
Now, play a mass, no worry yourself.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And bless you, Shoni, for representing Caribbean music on BBC One Extra. Thanks a lot for everything.
Thank you very much. Bless up, Nigel. Bless
not
up.
Not a problem. Okay, then. Well. That has been, that's probably one of the best interviews I've ever heard on this podcast, right? I mean, Laura, thank you for bringing her in. I mean, there's a lot of knowledge. And as I said, I'm not fully aware with what goes on across the pond, but I'm glad I was able to get an update of what happens. And critically for me, how does radio work in the UK? And Shoni B was able to share that information with us. And I hope you listeners take notice. And I hope the artists who are listening to us understand what is necessary to be part of the global music scene. It's all well and good to play in a couple of fets in the region and in North America, but the world is bigger than that. All right. And Shoni B is our first linchpin into getting across there. So once again, thank you, Shoni B, for a brilliant interview. Thank you, Laura, for bringing him to the attention of the podcast. And that's about it for the night. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know our usual thing. Looking forward to hearing from you next time. And certainly keep up with us on social media, Music Matters Caribbean, on both Instagram and Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel.
And yes.
So we convert all of these things into videos. So that's how it is. So we look forward to you. So that's about it now. So I am Nigel Campbell.
I am Laura Dorridge Phillips, and you've been listening to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition.
Bye.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to Music Matters, the Caribbean edition. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Music Matters Caribbean. And if you want to listen to our previous podcasts and keep up with our new material, check out the website podcast.iradio.tt or listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio Public, and more of your favorite podcast platforms.